everyone. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. We're going to continue our series where we bring on professionals and friends of Evoke. Today, we're lucky to have Sam Kelly. Sam is an art therapist, an author, and also a mother. And she has some fantastic content, which we think complements the work we do here at Evoke, and especially for those parents of younger children. So hi, Sam. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
So you have such a rich and diverse background of things that you bring to the world. And so maybe you can just introduce to our listeners your background, how you've kind of evolved from the book to the photography to now the homeschool work that you're doing. Tell us a little bit about your journey and how you got here.
Yeah, so I have a bachelor's degree in painting and drawing, actually. I've always been really fascinated with where art and like humans intersect. And so that led to a master's degree in art therapy counseling, which when I first found out that that was even a thing, it just felt like, right. Okay, this is me. These are my people. And that opened up the door to the amazing world of mental health work. After graduating, I worked at the University of Utah's Neuropsychiatric Institute. I have experience working with children, teenagers, families, adults. I have experience working with even older adults in like memory care, assisted living facilities, and then all the way in the other side of the spectrum to incarcerated teenage boys within an actual jail. So it's been a really varied and rich experience that way. I have also been divorced, which has added to, I feel like, my experience as well, and empathy. And then I became a mother and stopped working as far as clinical work went, and really quickly discovered that I couldn't not have a creative outlet and an outlet that helped me connect with other people outside of my home. My husband is a professional videographer, video editor, so we had a lot of camera equipment around the house. So we started, when I was pregnant with my first daughter, we started creating like family videos for other people. We started doing wedding videos, and that eventually morphed into me doing photography just on my own. And actually, the very first photography client I ever had was your daughter, Emma.
Is that right?
Yes, that was I came over and I shot a couple of senior pictures for her, and they were like totally good, not great, but it was like the moment where I felt, oh my gosh, I want to do this. And So from that point on, I just, because I only know how to do what things one way, and that's like full speed, 200%. I started a photography business, working with families primarily. I eventually switched over to shooting from digital photography to film photography. I hosted my own workshops. That eventually led to me founding a large photography conference with a good friend of mine. I did that for a few years and had some amazing experiences that way. And then about a year and a half ago, I just felt a pull that it was time to put slowly all of these things down. And that was really, really hard and confusing at the time. And there was a lot of grieving involved with letting go. And then I've just recently discovered that my art, my work, and my desire to connect is like all right in front of me. It's in my home, it's with my kids, it's with my families, and that this is like the masterpiece that I'm creating every day. And so I've always been, obviously, because of my mental health background and my training, really focused on my parenting. But now I'm like laser focused on it, as well as trying to teach others and be a means of support and help for the community around me, my Instagram. So that's me.
Before we go on any further, tell people your Instagram handle and your website. Now I'll have you do that at the end, but.
So I'm on Instagram at samkelly_world. And then my website is hellosamkelly.com.
You know, I've known your family for many years. In fact, the art that sits behind me at my desk when people are watching my webinars was your father painted those paintings. I might even have a painting of yours in our house. I think I do. You guys have such a rich, diverse, creative, intelligent Renaissance background. And before we move on to your current work, I want to ask you about your book, Young and Divorced, because I it's so often that people go through a dark or a difficult time before they reach their bliss, their creative outlet, or the place in their life where they really find meaning. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and why it was important to you to create, to write?
Yeah. So my book, I kind of describe my book as like a really, really intense passion project. I wrote it for other people, and I wrote it with the intent of trying to make meaning out of that experience and that tragedy and what I felt like the triumph that I was able to have over that. But ultimately, I wrote it for me. I wrote it because it felt like the final step in processing that entire experience and being able to get it outside of me and externalize it and then contain it within the bounds of like a page. And knowing that it's helped, you know, a handful of people has of course been really, really gratifying. But being able to make sense of that experience and to, and like I said, just process it through writing it out, which is definitely a huge creative process for me, was hugely healing.
You know, I love your work. I told you earlier that one of the things that drew me to having you on here as a guest is that I work with young adults and adolescents and parenting and those areas, and you work with younger children. And I was noticing as I was becoming more acquainted with your work about how well you hold space for children. You talk about that constantly in what you teach. Tell us a little bit about the favorite part, what draws you into this work and where that came from.
Yeah, so I think it's so interesting especially when you become a parent, because it's so easy to automatically assume that you're one type of human as an adult and that children are a different type of human. And there's a separation there. And it's so easy to invalidate their experience or to make their experience feel different or not as important as yours. So for like example, when we're speaking about emotions and holding space for big emotions, I have big feelings. That's a part of being a person. If I want my children to be fully emotionally developed, I want them to be able to feel the full extent of their emotions and actually encourage them feeling the full extent of their emotions. It's easy for me to think like, oh, why is my kid breaking down over the fact that this cookie is broken? It's a cookie. Don't they see? Can't they just be happy with the cookie? Right. And then I can turn around and do basically the exact same thing in my life, like freak out over the fact that a kid spilled milk on the floor.
Right.
When it's not about the milk. And for them, it's not about the cookie. It's about all these underlying emotions. And I think it's so easy for us as parents to forget that our kids are kind of exactly the same as us.
Right.
And maybe we didn't have somebody who listened to us, but we can be that person that listens to our children. And that's why I feel like holding space is so important, because our emotions dictate in such large part who we are and how we function in the world and with each other and what we're capable of becoming. And if we can't feel our emotions, or if we cut ourselves off from it, or if we're afraid of them, we're going to seriously stunt who we are right now, but also our potential. And then that to me is a tragedy, because then it's like, what is the world missing out on from what we could have been offering?
I love that so much, because in fact, I think I have this quote in both of my books. That's how central it is to my work, that says the proper way of raising a child is the proper way of treating another human being. Mm-hmm. By a famous psychologist. And I think it's so important, and parents can miss that. So I work, like I said, with my population. Sometimes my parents will have younger children, or they'll just wish that they had heard the message earlier. And many of them, one of their responses to my work is, this work that you're teaching us, Brad, doesn't apply to younger children. This work of really creating a safe container for a child, really seeing and listening to them to help them move through their feelings. So I'm going to give you a chance to answer that question. If somebody came to you and said, that really won't work with younger children need to be, it needs to be about boundaries and structure and teaching them the right thing to do. This idea about holding space doesn't apply to them. How would you respond to somebody's resistance to the idea, who had that idea?
Yeah. I guess I would first respond by asking them to get curious and to ask themselves, okay, so what is it you're afraid of then? If you hold space for kids and allow them to express their emotions all the way, what are we afraid of, or what are we afraid is going to happen? What's our fear there? And then I think there can be an opportunity to connect and find common ground. So I think a lot of people's fear is that the child will be out of control, that there will be no discipline, that you're going to get like walked all over as a parent. And I have found that when we hold space for big feelings, when we allow our children to know that all feelings are acceptable, and that they can feel those feelings without acting on them, that is when they can become not only better in control of their behavior, but also their desire to align themselves with you and to be open to your influence is so much greater. And as parents, that's really the only thing we have is our influence. If we don't have influence, if we don't have connection, mm-hmm. then we've lost the game.
Right. I tell the story, Sam, I think you'll find it interesting because you just spoke to it, about this father who told me years ago, as he was going to lecture his son because his son had violated some clear boundaries in the home. And he went to his son saying, he said to me, Brad, I know I shouldn't lecture. I know I shouldn't raise my voice, but I went to my son and started to tell him, yell at him, raise my voice, lecture him, and just saying to him, why did you do this thing you know you're not supposed to do? And I said, let me just repeat back to you what you said. You just said, I know I'm not supposed to do this. And then I went and asked my son why he was doing something he knew he wasn't supposed to do. And it's that idea about, we imagine that they're different than us, right? Yeah. But we have the same, we can relate to them in many ways on an emotional level in an even way. What are some of the, I shared with you some of the struggles that parents have when I'm teaching. What are the most common struggles that parents have when you're teaching them? Because I know you get a lot of interaction with the families that you work with and teach. What are some of the common challenges that people, as you're teaching them, as you're presenting your model to them, that they come back with?
Two main things pop in my head. One is, when we're dealing with big emotions in our children, it triggers our own unfelt feelings. And so it brings to the forefront very, very quickly our own need for self-examination, personal work, healing. And that's can be really overwhelming. It can be very intimidating, and it can be something that we just frankly don't feel like we have time for. But it's like absolutely the most important step to do in order to then give the gift to your child of allowing them to feel their feelings. So that comes up a lot. Like, how do I deal with my own triggers? How do I deal with my own stuff? So I'm not making my child hold what is mine. And then the second thing that comes up a lot is, I think there's been in the world of traditional parenting, we're starting to see that these ideas of like punishment, I think we're getting boundaries confused with punishment. I think we are telling ourselves that children use emotions to manipulate us. I see a lot of talk about the need to ignore different kind of emotions or different behavior. And if we just ignore what's undesirable, then it will just eventually go away. Which is true in part, but it's actually kind of missing the whole point. So just trying to educate around a different narrative is a huge part of what I'm trying to do in my work, especially in speaking with parents.
So one of my passions is our family of origin and our relationship with them. I'm curious how your professional work, education, training, and the work you do with families, how has that impacted your perspective on growing up in your family of origin?
So anyone who knows anything about my family of origin will tell you right away, and you said it too at the beginning of this podcast, mm-hmm. You have an amazing family. And I do. Our family is really, really strong and great in some really cool ways. We are not perfect. We struggle. And there's things that I absolutely wish were different. But I think to a lot of people, actually to everyone probably, from the outside looking in, we look really awesome. And I mean that, like, my mom is amazing. She's just a rock star wherever she goes. My dad is gentle and kind and loving. Me and my sisters are all doing kind of really neat, big things in the world. And we get that in large part from my mom. My mom is a huge mover and a shaker, and we've grown up with that kind of influence and that passion, which I'm so grateful for. Obviously, I can't speak for anyone else in my family, but for me, a big part of this parenting focus has caused me to reflect on my own family and my own relationship with my parents. And growing up, and it's helped me realize that there was not perfection, and there was actually some really big mistakes, and I can say that, and that can be true, while also being true that my parents are amazing.
Right.
Hold space for those two truths. And it's also been really, really freeing to realize that, like, my parents are not perfect. Mm. And because then it makes me feel like I don't have to be perfect. And I actually really hope my kids grow up and that they go to therapy and that they're able to confront me and say, hey,
right,
you did this and it hurt me. And that I can just listen to them. Like, to me, that would be like my crowning achievement as a parent and a right. mother. If my children are able to recognize that I am deeply, deeply human,
mm-hmm.
and for them to be able to understand that and be okay with that and actually tell me about it, I think would be really great.
That is, I cannot tell you the smile on my face, how happy that makes me, because that's a big part of my message. In fact, the last broadcast I did for us, I talked about this idea of shifting the idea about what we think it means to be a quote unquote good parent. And it is just what you described, being mm-hmm. able to hold space for your adult child or your older children and the pain that they feel that you may have caused or contributed to. And that's being a good parent. So your children are lucky that you have that idea in mind this early, because very, very few people have that. And also the fact that you're teaching what we talk about all the time, which is it's hardly ever either or. It's almost always both, right? Absolutely. Like, we can be angry and love each other at the same time. We can be hurt and be grateful for our parents at the same time. So thank you so much for sharing that. That's really, really powerful. Your work is really practical. I think your work is sometimes a lot more practical than the work that I do, because you're showing it in real time sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's very personal. We share that together. I do the same kind of thing with the families that I work with. But I always want to be asked this question, and I never get asked this question. So I'm going to ask it to you, because I'm dealing with children who are struggling later on. What advice, if somebody came to you and they were pregnant, a couple comes to you and they say, what are the one or two things that you could give to us that you've learned that we wouldn't necessarily know coming into this?
That's a really good question. Gosh, I would say, just like we've been talking about, this person from the very beginning, from day one, is a human in all the ways that you are a human. Treat them exactly the way that you maybe weren't treated, but wish you would have been treated. And then I would also say that the connection that you have with your children is everything. And that if connection is weakened, that you can always repair. It's not about never breaking the connection, but it's about learning how to repair connection once it's been hurt.
I've seen you do that with your children on your videos. I've seen you model apologies to your children. I wrote something the other day about, I was talking about key concepts for boundaries. And then after I wrote this, I just sat with it and thought, this can imply that we can get it right all the time. So the last idea I had was, and then when we fall short and our child finds our limit, which they inevitably will, we can say we're sorry, and perhaps model the most important thing of all, which is, it's okay to be human. Then our children can learn to apologize. And when they make a mistake, it's not going to be the end of the world for them. So again, thank you for the model.
Yeah.
So speaking about connection, how do you teach your kids about connection?
So we've actually had a really huge breakthrough recently. And it happened, first its origins were my own experience in personal therapy. I was talking to my therapist about how can I help my kids make happy choices in their lives. Ultimately, what I was asking is, how can I control my children without bribing them, threatening them, punishing them? Like, what do I have? What can I use if I can't use any of those things? Because I don't want to use any of those things, because I know those things are not the parent, in line with the parent that I want to be. And they're actually not effective. But then where can I get control? And the amazing thing was that my therapist helped me realize it's not about control. So I gave up control and I leaned into connection. And what that looks like on a practical level is I sat down and I talked with my kids and I said, okay, guys, these are the things I don't want to do anymore. And I was very specific. And I used the words rewards, bribes, punishment. And I talked about why I don't want to do those things. So we were all on the same page. And I said, but what we are going to use is connection. And I used a metaphor of like a rope. Like, we each have a connection rope going between us. And the choices that we make can either strengthen that rope or it can weaken it. And I really, really like it because it's not, there's no like value judgment about the rope. Like it just is. And they get to choose whether that rope and keeping that rope strong is important to them or not. But it doesn't take away the reality that their actions do have effects on the rope. And so it took probably 5 hours of the very first day of this for them to see the immediate effects of connection in their relationships with each other and with me. And it immediately motivated them to make choices that strengthens our relationship, that strengthens their connection, because that's what they want for themselves. And not because they're doing it begrudgingly or with resentment or just because someone's telling them to. Mm-hmm. The ownership that has been able to be theirs over their choices has been so empowering. And again, it's because I have no control over that. That's all their control. But I love it because it models real life.
Right.
And it models ultimately why we want to be kind. We want to be kind because of the connections we have with people. Mm-hmm. We want to make certain choices because of our relationships. We're social beings. And that's how we live in this world. And anyways, it's just been really, really amazing to see the transformation happen and to see that when there is breaks in connection or that when decisions are made that weakens connection, the motivation to then repair it is wholly theirs as well. And right. They're doing like the most, like I could never make them apologize to each other or repair relationships in the ways that they are doing completely on their own now.
Wow. Obviously it's inevitable we're going to work together at some point, some kind of workshop or something, because what I hear in your work is you've proved an idea that I've theorized for a long time, because I work in the mental illness area, addiction area, you know, where kids are struggling, families are struggling. And I've said prevention is the same work as repair, right? The things that we do in treatment are the same things that we would do, or we would use that to inform parents about the things to do ahead of time. One of the chapters in my first book is influence versus control, which you've talked about. I was just telling my therapist this a couple of weeks ago in our supervision, where a child was regressing because of some triggers in the program. And after listening to a lot of really intelligent discussion and case consultation, I just said, don't forget to ask them how they're feeling. Mm. You know, like, how would it be in a moment when any of us struggle if the authority figure, the person involved in the situation, just took a moment to say, how are you doing? It could melt away so much of our defensiveness. So thank you so much. I'm so grateful to have you on. Tell everybody again one more time about your website and your social media so they know where to find you.
Yeah, sure. Website is Sam Kelly, and it's just SAMKELLY _world. And the website is hellosamkelly.com.
And it's beautiful, by the way. I'm jealous of how amazing it looks. It's fantastic. So I have one last question, and it might sound like I'm trying to make a joke, but I'm not. Because I know your work ethic. I know the work ethic of your family. So the question I like to ask is, what do you like to do in your spare time for fun? But that might not exist. So instead of saying it that way, is there anything you like to do that doesn't have to do with your professional life? What do you do for self-care? What do you do to feed yourself outside of the work that you do?
I am like the biggest fangirl of bubble baths. That's a huge like meditative practice for me. Now that the weather is nice, when the kids are down, my husband and I like to just spend time together outside, whether it's just, you know, circling our block 20 times. together or sitting out in our backyard. And then just Netflix shows like any other person in this world.
Right now, sometimes my clients will ask me on our sessions, that's one of the questions, of like, what are you hearing? What are people watching? What are you watching? Because it's a tool. It's like we all have this challenge right now during the pandemic. So it's, I think we're all sharing in that experience for sure. So Sam, I'm so grateful for you taking the time to join us. So grateful for the work that you're doing for families. And again, really appreciative of how much we share, even though we really do have two different populations. There's so much overlap. And so thanks for coming on today.
Hey, you're so welcome. It was an honor, Brad. I appreciate you asking me.
All right, folks, you can go to Sam's website or social media. You can also go to evoketherapyprograms.com. You can also find us on Instagram at Evoke Therapy, or our intensive programs at Evoke Therapy Intensives. So thanks for joining us. I hope these are helpful. Take care, and I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Slowly chose